The Athletic.
Mikel Arteta takes charge of Arsenal's first Champions League quarter-final in 14 years on Tuesday night. Top of the Premier League, and with the opportunity to make a serious statement in Europe, how has Arteta revived this Arsenal side? And with Jurgen Klopp leaving and Pep Guardiola's long-term Manchester City future uncertain, is he ready to build a dynasty in North London? I'm Ayo Akinwolere. Welcome to the Athletic FC podcast. Okay, joining me today, we have the Athletic's Arsenal writers, Art de Roche and Jordan Campbell as well. Let's just talk about some of the stats. Arsenal in the Premier League in 2024 are 11 games, 10 wins, 38 goals scored, 4 goals conceded. Brighton was the fifth consecutive Premier League away clean sheet for the first time since April 1997. And Arsenal have now kept more away clean sheets in their last 5 Premier League games, that's 5 of them, than any other side has kept away from home all season. Jordan, is this all by design? Is it Arteta, or is there more to it than that?
I mean, I think the way that he's built on last year, you know, there's a lot of people thinking, can they really go again and reach that level? Just before Christmas, you were thinking they might struggle to reach that points total, but they've just gone 10 games unbeaten now. I think it's the longest Premier League unbeaten run under Arteta. So something's clicked, and I think something's solidified in the team. So you look at Arsenal's team now, and you just don't see them conceding. I mean, we talk about them going forward. Since Christmas, it's been great, but they've just got this way to control games, even if they're not playing their fluid best, that they just don't concede big chances. Even Man City and Liverpool, they've left them behind. And I think going down the home straight, that's why I personally have got so much confidence in this Arsenal team, because compared to last season, you've not got that fluctuation where every game, a bit like Liverpool this year, everything's a roller coaster, everything's emotional. And I think Arsenal have just taken the stress out of games and just they're ticking them off one by one without any real stress, any real drama. So I think they've got plenty in the tank because of that.
Art, just before we started recording the pod, we were talking about David Raya, Havertz, to be able to get something out of Kai Havertz in a way that he's outscoring his time than he was at Chelsea, and David Raya offering that defensive solidity. There's a sort of ruthlessness here, which we will go into in a second, of actually previous personnel didn't fit what I want. Actually, I'm going to bring the right people in to make sure they are playing my style of football.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting because some of it is to do with Arteta, of course. He's the manager. And I think you see that more with David Raya, because when you look over the 4 and a bit years Arteta's been in charge, he started with Bernd Leno as his goalkeeper, then upgraded, if we want to call it that, to Aaron Ramsdale, someone who's a bit more suited to what he wanted. But then last summer, people wouldn't really have said Arsenal needed another upgrade, and people wouldn't have thought that David Raya was another upgrade until the last few months. But you see how big that marginal gain has really helped Arsenal. And then with Havertz, I think it's more of a case of, and Arteta's spoken about this recently, the players actually deciding how far this team can go, because Arteta and Arsenal brought him in to be a midfielder. That was all the talk that was coming out of the club in the summer. But when Arteta speaks about seeing these guys in training, sometimes they actually decide where they play, is the way he's put it. And you see that with Havertz, how when he's gone up front throughout the year, I'd say even as early as the Community Shield, he's made a real impact, much more than when he's played in midfield. And just how he's able to link with certain players, I think, has really developed quite naturally. So I'd say definitely it's a mix with these players where you see some of it is definitely Arteta's plan. Other sides of it are these players making so much of an impact on Arteta that he has to almost adapt to them in a way.
But I mean, like, just on that, yeah, sure. He's actually, you know, rolled with the punches, because I think there's this perception that Arsenal have got really lucky this year with injuries and they've had no one out. I mean, that's not really the case if you look at it. But I think Arteta last year almost could not move away from plan A. But I think now if you look at, you know, the evolution of the team, early in the season, it looked like his plan was maybe to have Timber on the left or invert both the fullbacks or invert the right fullback. That went out the window within a month. Then at Christmas time, Zinchenko goes out. He inverts White, he uses Kiwior as a bit of a more functional fullback, and that starts to get the best out of Martinelli. And now he just seems to have stuck with Havertz, because he realises that when somebody's in the flow, you sometimes can't interrupt that. And I think he's now, you know, I think he's now at the point where if you were at a big game, which every game is big, whether it's Bayern on Tuesday, whether it's the league game, I think he now knows who he trusts for his big games. And I think the Havertz up front has been, as Art said, like he's played his way into that role now that I don't think you can actually move him.
Where does this young squad rank then if we compare it to the great Invincibles? I mean, it's still really early to say, but I think something I would see as a similarity is that it's that sort of do or die attitude, that kind of, you get a sense that this is a team that believes they can win matches. I think there's a similarity there, but this is still a young team though, Art. Do you know what I mean? Is it too early to start making those kind of comparisons? Because defensively, they're solid.
I'd say potentially, but even within that squad, they know they have the belief. Gabriel Jesus was speaking on Monday ahead of the Bayern Munich game, and he said, these guys aren't kids anymore. Even though Bukayo Saka is only 22 years old, he's been a professional footballer playing at a really high level for about 4 or 5 years, which is ridiculous when you think about it. And even beyond that, you have players like William Saliba, who's still only 22, 23 years old. And when you just look at where the trajectory of the squad has gone, it's been very natural as well. So I don't think it's a bad shout. I would also say when you look at Arsenal since the Invincible squad, they've always kind of had more attacking talent. I'd say when their best season, I would probably say 2007 to around 2010, that era when they were able to get to the Champions League semi-finals as well, you had players like Kleb, Nasri, Arshavin Fabregas, Rzyski as well. But then you looked at the back half of the team, and you had William Gallas, Senderos, these kind of guys. I'm not meaning to disrespect them, but now you're looking at Saliba, Gabriel, and you, Ben White, I'd include in that as well.
Sure.
And you just see so much more steel across the whole team.
Yeah, I like that, steel. Something I've always been interested in, Jordan, is where managers come from, you know, the impact their journeys had on their career and players as well. And I think for a lot of managers that aren't English, you get this sense that they travel a lot. And Arteta, if you look at him, and I know you've written about it, this sort of cultural makeup of his, you know, from Spain to France to Scotland, England as well. Do you think this has contributed to the style of play and the person we see in front of us today?
Definitely. I mean, I asked him about this last week and he was saying, you know, that's what he's tried to do, is try to pick little bits from every manager, every culture, and try to blend it together to make it his own. And I now think you're at a point where, you know, there's always comparisons with Pep and Man City. Mm-hmm. But I think if you look at the two teams this season, you can see that there is divergence. They're not, yeah, there's similarities, but they're not nowhere near the exact same carbon copy of each other. So I think he's now built a sort of Arsenal way, if you want to call it that. I know people like to talk about that, but I think, you know, Arsenal are now identifiable in the way they play. But yeah, as we say, it's always the sort of Pep school of thought. But I think if you dig into Arteta himself, you know, people underestimate the drive this guy's got, how obsessive he is and wanting to learn and wanting to be better. Mm-hmm. You don't get that if you are just repeating or copying what someone has told you to do. You know, he'll have formulated these ideas in football since he was growing up in San Sebastian or he was at La Masia. But I think if you look at the character, to go to PSG, to decide that I'm not going to get in here at Barcelona just because there's so many top, top players, I'm going to go to PSG, makes himself an integral part of the team there. Then he goes to Rangers, 18, 19 years old, barely speaks English, goes into the hotbed of football when a lot of people can, even if you're a great player, can just sink in that environment, and ends his first season by taking the penalty to win, to, you know, basically seal the league on the last minute of the season. So yeah, I think if you look at that, those sort of early steps, but then you've got Everton under David Moyes as well. And I think when you look at Arteta, people forget or maybe underestimate how much of his football identity and how he thinks of football is about stopping the opposition. You know, I think we almost think this idealistic, it's all about pretty build-up play, but he's spent the majority of his career in British football and British changing rooms. So that's bound to have affected the way he thinks and the way that he thinks best to play against a variety of teams. So yeah, I think style one thing, and then character all of the cities he's been to have got a very, very sort of unique identity, whether it's like Basque independence, Catalonian independence.
There's the Old Firm Derby.
There's the Old Firm Derby.
Look at that, yeah.
There's everything. There's Scouse, not English, you know. Literally, this is a guy who like does not go to easy places. I think, you know, the fact that he took Arsenal on when they were in quite a bad time, you know, people like maybe shocked. But I think if you look, you're like, this guy does not shock away from a challenge.
I like that. And I guess, you know, there are some similarities here between, you know, a lot of the other coaches from the Basque region. I was talking to Iraola recently at Bournemouth, and he was talking about having to leave Spain to taste something new. And I think he played in New York under Patrick Vieira at the time, but I think Lampard was there and Pirlo was there, and he's like, I can't even tell you just how much you learn from these players. But I needed to leave home to get this greater sense of football.
Yeah.
We've seen it with Xabi Alonso. We've seen it with Unai Emery as well. Now, I just want to bring this back to his style of play, because Jordan just mentioned there all the different places he's been to. But then we look at the managers he's also been under. David Moyes, Arsene Wenger, obviously Pep Guardiola. This isn't Manchester City part two. This is Arteta football. And do you think those managers have really contributed into the football we see today?
Definitely. Yeah. He has spoken quite a few times about when he first started thinking about management properly. And the moment he goes to is when he snapped his ACL at Everton. So he was under David Moyes at the time. And I think for me, when you saw, I guess, the early stages of Arteta at Arsenal, a lot of it was about how do you stop the opponent. And word he actually prefers is dominance. He prefers that than control, because it is all about almost suffocating the opposition team and making sure you almost have them in a chokehold for 90 minutes, which Arsenal are able to do quite regularly now. And I think one other thing that contributes to that is the makeup of the team. When you see the teams David Moyes had, they were always very big. And I think with Arteta's first few signings, you saw, I guess, the theory. His first signing was Pablo Mari. That obviously didn't go to plan. But in theory, it was a tall centre-back who was left-footed. So you had maybe a bit of Moyes thinking, but also the balance of a Johan Cruyff, who he also admits was one of his biggest influences when he was at La Masia. Then that didn't quite work. So his next big signing was Gabriel. That was the first, I guess, major signing made by Arteta at Arsenal. And I think it's probably one of the most important ones, because he wasn't just someone who worked in theory, but has worked really well in practice as well. And I think his influence has grown year on year at the club. And he's a real example of, I guess, how far this Arsenal team has been able to come, because I don't think a lot of people outside of Arsenal realized how good he was until he's been as consistent as he is now, where maybe in the outside world, he's finally now getting the praise he deserves.
Mm. Do we see the elements of Pep then, though? And we talk about recruitment yet again in terms of having players that are interchangeable in different positions as well.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, he's only still used 25 players. Last year it was 26, so he does like a tight squad. That is similar to Pep Guardiola. Despite Man City's, you know, riches, they still like a tight squad. This season they've made 58 changes from starting 11 to starting 11. So there is definitely a little bit more rotation going on than last year, when it was 38 and 38 games. Literally an average of one every single game. But I think if you look at the recruitment, like 10 of the squad now have been signed from fellow Premier League clubs. And I think that's Arteta learned over the course of the years, is that adaptability. And it maybe takes a couple of years for players to adapt to the pace and the relentlessness of the Premier League. So I think that's definitely one bit. But when he was at City, I was told that there was quite a key moment at the end of his first season, Guardiola, where there was some internal research done on how to build sort of dominant teams that compete on multiple fronts every single year, year in, year out, without dipping. And there was some magic formula maybe concocted, but Arteta was instrumental in getting Pep to buy into that. Because I think Arteta's a little bit younger than Pep, maybe a bit more open-minded to certain things and bringing the whole club together. So that'll definitely be something that he's probably taken with him, elements of that, to Arsenal in terms of building a squad. But you're now at the point where you've got that interchangeability, you've got that age profile, you've got them all signed up under multi-year contracts. And you're looking at it thinking, there's not a lot needing to change there. It's literally just one or two little bits. If you look at the spending, during his time, he spent double what he has on defenders and defensive midfielders than he has on attack midfielders, wingers and strikers combined. So he's very much like a sort of fundamentals first, which maybe he gets from Moyes.
Yeah, I like that. Where do we see the Wenger similarities then with Arteta?
For me, I see it when, obviously, when they attack. And we probably haven't seen it properly for about a year, because again, something Gabriel Jesus mentioned was this year, Arsenal are probably playing the football they played in the first half of last season now. So it's almost the reverse, if that makes sense. And when, I guess, Arsenal were mounting that title charge last year, a lot of the talk was about how they're copying Manchester City. But all their attacking play was so fluid that it reminded me of those Wenger teams of the early Emirates era, I'd say, with so much rotation in that final third. You had Gabriel Jesus as a nine pulling out to the left very naturally. And then they almost doubled down on that with Trossard. And we've seen how that's really worked for them this season, whether it be with him dovetailing with Havertz or coming in off the left a bit more. So I think that freedom that their attackers are afforded to just move is a big, big Wengerism. Because with Wenger, he had those players I mentioned earlier, Hleb, Rzyski, Nasri. They were central midfielders playing out wide with the ability to come in. And I think having those technical players, you see it with Trossard and Odegaard now, technical ability is probably the biggest factor that Arteta looks for as well in a player. And I think that's the real Wenger stamp of an Arsenal team that are able to play in a way that's identifiable with Arsenal.
Hello everyone, it's Ian Stone, host of Handbrake Off, the Arsenal podcast brought to you by The Athletic. Well, we're in the home straight of the season, so to keep up with all the goings on during the running, join me, Amy Lawrence, James McNicholas, Adrian Clarke and Art DeRoche twice a week as we chart what we all hope will be a memorable end to the campaign. Listen for free wherever you usually get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Athletic FC podcast with Ayo Akinwolere.
As we're talking Arsene Wenger, we're going to hear from The Athletic's Amy Lawrence on how Arsenal's structure right now compares to during the Wenger era.
In comparing how Arsenal operate now with Arteta to the Arsene Wenger era, the most significant and important thing is to recognise that when Arsene Wenger was at the club, there were really two clearly defined almost halves of that tenure with quite different flavours and essentially different structures. So it's important to note that Arteta and Arsenal now resonate and remind us more of the first period of Wenger when Arsenal was successful. So going back to that time, Arsene had a very, very strong working relationship with David Dean, who was the vice chairman, who essentially ran the business side of the club. And behind that, there was a pretty solid board that had been there for a long time and, you know, were Arsenal-orientated people. And the club was considered to be very well run. And the relationships and the trust were super strong, particularly where Wenger and Dean are concerned. And those relationships between manager and club are critical. So the second half of the Wenger era, that changed. The ownership structure was messy. There was a power struggle at the top between the Kroenkes and Usmanov, who was trying to get involved with Arsenal. Ivan Gazidis ran the club. And if you would maybe have this image of Arsene Wenger and David Dean of being like so connected, almost blood brothers, it was very much not the case when it came to Wenger and Gazidis. They were not really seeing eye to eye a lot of the time, and that trust was not there. And hence, when you have a base and a foundation that has not got positivity around it, it's really hard to be successful. So if you look at Arsenal now and that trust between Arteta and particularly Edu on the football side, but also Josh Kroenke representing the board, all the senior leadership team, they're very, very strongly bonded. They all seem to be sharing the same ideas, the same philosophies, which again echoes of the Wenger-Dean environment. I think it was a big moment in the way that Arsenal restructured and saw Arteta when they made him manager. Remember when he first joined the club, he was head coach. And in fact, part of the restructuring vision led by Ivan Gazidis was that they would get rid of this idea of an overarching manager who had a say beyond just the first team. And Wenger was notable for having that real big impact on every little thing that was going on around the club. And in the end, that became difficult in the second half of his reign because there was too much going on and there was too much friction between different departments, if you like, and things weren't functioning very well. But Arteta made it pretty clear pretty quickly to the powers that be that he needed to have that more overarching broad brush to his influence at the club. And since then, things have gone from strength to strength. So when you trust that person to have the big ideas, people around that person will go that extra mile to follow those ideas. And that's when you've got a chance of something great happening.
Yeah, you can hear more from Amy on The Athletic's dedicated Arsenal podcast, Handbrake Off. As Amy just said, you know, it all comes down to relationships, really. One of the things she touched on was Arteta going from head coach to manager. I think it was after the FA Cup, wasn't it? After the FA Cup win. When was that period?
Yeah, so as Amy mentioned, it happened, I think, about 8 months after he came in. So he was appointed in December 2019, and then by August 2020, he was changed to manager. And I think that one shows how intent he was on making it his Arsenal. And you see that with Edu, he was able to click very quickly and have so much authority in those signings that it was very much his vision. So the left foot centre back, Marian Gabriel, I think is the cornerstone of that. But then beyond that, the whole structure of Arsenal in a backroom sense changed as well, because he had Raul Sanlehi as the head of football there at the time. He actually left within a week or so of Mikel Arteta becoming manager, and the recruitment very much became Arteta and Edu rather than it being a head of football buying a player for a head coach to just manage or to deal with on the grass. So now whenever Arteta talks about his signings, he doesn't say it's my signing. He often says it's our signing, the club signing, which obviously you don't get at every club, where sometimes managers or head coaches more specifically will just have to deal with a signing they may not particularly agree with and have to maybe fit a square peg in a round hole, for instance. Whereas now, for the past, it's coming up to 4 years in August that he's been manager, I think that long-term thinking, you could see it in all of the signings and the recruitment that has been made, because it's very much, I guess, the importance is put on attributes as well rather than just positions. And that's where you get the interchangeability that yourself and Jordan were speaking about earlier.
Yeah, Jordan, I'm just thinking about that symbiotic relationships between top managers in the club. And actually, by promoting Arteta to manager from head coach shows a lot of faith from the club in what they're seeing right there in front of them.
Yeah, no, it does. And I think he's repaid that already. I think it's often a difficult subject. You know, what is the right way to do it? Do you have a director of football who, you know, makes sure that there's no cliff edge when one manager leaves? But I think that's the holy grail that every club is still probably searching for, is how do you have a Pep or a Klopp or a Sir Alex or an Arteta? How do you become serial winners and then continue being serial winners when they've left? Because it's difficult not to, if you get someone like Arteta who is so all-encompassing, is so energetic and wants to know everything, every single department, how can you not give him that sort of overview if you're really investing in him and letting him shape the club? How do you do that though? Well, then, preserving what he's built. So I think that's the really difficult thing, because I think he's got his fingerprints in so many different parts of the club that it will be a test when he leaves. But I mean, you even look at Pep Guardiola, I don't think everyone inside CFG thinks that they are maybe as prepared. They maybe want to be better prepared for when he left than maybe they are now, because they've obviously got a network of clubs where they're trying to hone their own coaches, but there's not really a ready-made one to come right in. So I think everyone's wrestling with that.
I think also a big contribution to why he was able to survive is that change to manager. We have to remember it's not been an easy 4 years, especially the first two, when in, I think it was his first full season, they went almost 2 months without a Premier League win. And internally, there wasn't really any sense of him being on the way out. And I think a big reason for that was how all-encompassing he is and how, I guess, tunnel visioned in a way he can be in what he wants. And having made that shift just a few weeks or months prior to manager, I don't think they would have just ripped that up at the, I guess, Christmas of the next season.
Yeah. How important is it that, you know, you've got this faith from the Cronkies? You get a sense that they've backed him with money, but also this ability to sort of manage up and down. You know, how important is that for a top coach at a big club?
Someone said to me, like, managing a top football club is like being president of, like, a small country. Mm. So, like, you've got to have that. You've always got to be a politician. You've got to have that political nous to manage relationships and, A, bring people with you, whether it's above you or the people that you're in charge of, every department across the board. But you've also got to be able to sell the vision to those above you, that even if it is difficult, they can still see where the journey's going. So I think that's what Arteta internally did well. But yeah, I think he has been very smart at that, that he's got himself to a point now where he has got so much power within the club that it's almost his authority is, you know, unquestionable. Mm. But I think you look at Edu, you look at Richard Garlick there, these are guys who have now been part of the journey now for years. Mm. And you've got that real, clubs like to talk about alignment, but you have got that alignment now where they're all young guys, relatively young guys who are, seem to all be on the same page when it comes to recruitment and where they're taking this Arsenal team.
Yeah, as Amy mentioned, are there some similarities here between the David Dean era and Wenger and Edu and Arteta? Because, you know, Jordan just spoken about that alignment, you know, in terms of policies, in terms of having someone on your side. Like, you know, do we see that alignment here at Arsenal with Arteta at the helm of it?
Yeah, it's definitely got similarities, I'd say. And what makes that really important is there aren't too many voices that are able to maybe confuse things. Because when it was, say, the structure before the changes, so when it was Edu as, say, director of football with Sanlehi as head of football, I think with that you got maybe muddled plans because different people would maybe think differently about recruitment, for instance. Whereas now, Arteta and Edu have been able to really fine-tune what they want to bring into the side, also how they want to go about it. I don't think it would have been a popular decision, not just outside with fans, but inside the club to pay people to leave, like Mesut Ozil, Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang. But when it's just two people that have to make that decision, it probably becomes a lot easier. So I think through the difficult times, you're able to see that synergy really, really grow. And now it's just about maintaining that. And I think it's a lot easier to do that when it is just two or three people who are really in control of where that football ship goes.
They've streamlined the recruitment team as well. So I think that's probably why you've seen this profile sort of crystallise the last couple of years, where it is, right, we're buying ready-made players who don't need any time to adapt.
We see it with Pep, we see it with Klopp, that the manager often becomes as big or even not bigger than the club in terms of the decisions that they're making and the power that they have. We talk about Unai Emery slowly beginning to be that at Aston Villa with the power he wants within the structure. How do you prevent that? Because at some point, as you said, these managers are going to have to leave. And then you've got this gulf of the DNA in which they've inputted into the club, but then they're not at the helm of it anymore.
Yeah, and I mean, being from Glasgow, you know, just coming from covering Rangers, I look at, you know, it's maybe an unpopular name to mention on an Arsenal podcast, but you look at Ange coming in at Celtic. Yeah. I think Celtic and Rangers are two teams that you can see how quickly things can change. Mm. You know, you can go from having no structure whatsoever to then Ange coming in and completely bringing in most players himself. And then he leaves 2 years later and he's not left much structure behind. So again, it's interesting when you've got such a big personality, because all these guys, they have got an ego. They believe that they know best, and you've got to believe that they do. So you've got to almost give them the keys to it. There's some, you know, cautionary tales out there and giving managers too much faith. But I take the view that you've got to give them some level of autonomy over transfers to build their team how they like. Because if you don't, what is your identity then? If they're not in charge of the identity, then how are you building a long-term plan?
But then if that identity is so intrinsic to the progress of the club, when they do leave, do you then go, all right, fair enough, we've got another 4 or 5 years to try and figure this out? Because there goes our, you know, our messiah in many respects.
Well, I think what is really important when you think about the Arteta years is how well Freddie Ljungberg actually did to bridge the gap between Emery and Arteta. You had someone who knew Arsenal inside out from his playing days, but also from a coaching perspective. He was actually the one that gave Bukayo Saka his chance at left back, because he knew that Saka was able to play there because he coached him as a 15-year-old. He was also the one that gave Emile Smith Rowe his first Premier League start. And I think in those 3 weeks, you almost got a hard reset of what Arsenal meant in a footballing sense, which made it, I'm not saying 100% easier for Arteta, but having at least something of a reset probably helped Arteta just focus on what he needed to at the time. So I think when you're looking at succession planning and what happens next after these big managers go, you actually do need someone in there who knows what the club is, because although Unai Emery is a very good coach, he probably didn't understand what Arsenal was. And we saw that with how often he changed things, because he was very much a head coach who would plan for the opposition, whereas Arsenal had never really been a club who did that. They were always a club who planned to play the way they play. And that's what they do with Arteta. Even if they are very much more defensively astute, they still do it with the intention of being Arsenal rather than, oh, this is X team and we're scared of them. So I think that is a really big factor into it as well.
Yeah, where do we look then as we're moving forward? We're sort of into phase 4.5 of Arteta, heading into phase 5. And I mean, a lot can still change in the Premier League, right? Klopp is obviously departing. Guardiola, no one quite knows, you know, where he's going to be in a couple of seasons' time. But realistically, how long does a club stick with a coach like Arteta if he doesn't bring trophies in to the club?
Well, I mean, if Arsenal don't end up with a trophy this year, I think it'll be a big disappointment because of how good they are.
Yeah, but it's the Premier League and the Champions League. I mean, these are the biggest trophies in European football.
That's what I mean. Like, it's almost, the bar is so high that you need to reach, but there'll be people who say, you know, Arsenal are bottle merchants if they don't do it. But I think if you look, that's 2 years of now top level form that they've sustained. So I think it's just a matter of time, really. And this squad is a really young squad. It'll be together for another 3, 4, 5 years, really, with just sort of small changes needed. Maybe someone will dip, maybe there'll be an injury somewhere, but the core of that squad is there to build on. So I look at Arteta and I think, how long could he be there? I mean, if Klopp's leaving and Pep's maybe got a year or two left, then you look at Arteta and think he is the next sort of super manager in the Premier League that could go on and have 5 or 6 years. But I think that is the last stage, really, is that it's a mentality thing. I think is that it's fine being consistent and being in that sort of that mindset where every game has got to win. But then you need to get over the finish line. They've obviously done it in the FA Cup a couple of times, but done it in the Community Shield now. I think the next bit is over the long haul. Can you, when push comes to shove down the home straight or in the last 50 minutes of a knockout tie, have you got that belief that really only starts to really come when you have got over the line once? Is that sort of, it's that muscle memory, I think. And I think that is the last bit. It's hard to quantify what that is, but I think when you've got it, you know you've got it. And I think that Arsenal team is now beginning to develop that aura where we're talking about the Invincibles team.
Yeah.
Staring them right down there, in the tunnel, you know. And Arteta said, I've experienced what it's like, that fear you get, thinking this is going to be a hard night. And I think that Arsenal team now, everyone knows that they're very rarely going to have an off day. And even when they have an off day, they've got that structure to fall back on that they just don't lose easily. So I think that's maybe the last 0.5 or 0.3, you know.
Well, it brings it to a point, really, because I think, you know, three seasons ago, Arsenal finished fifth in the Premier League. And then you look at the Premier League battle last season, which they dipped off, and then you see another clear progression again this year. I mean, it hasn't taken that long if you think about where Manchester United are right now and what Chelsea are looking like going through at this moment in time. But do you think this is a team that's been built for dominance post the Pep Guardiola era?
Yeah, I think a big thing with Arsenal is context and trajectory. Over the past 3-4 years, it has always been steadily increasing. Even if they maybe have disappointed at the end of the season, 2 years ago they finished fifth, and that was off the back of an eighth place finish. Then they go and finish second. So I think even if they don't go on and win the league this year, the trajectory is still on an upwards kind of incline, yeah. I'd call it. And to what Jordan's talking about and bringing it a bit more full circle in regards to belief, that is something that Mikel Arteta has been speaking about ahead of playing Bayern Munich as well, needing those magic moments to then just generate that belief for future days. And he said that the Porto game was a really big example of that, because Arsenal haven't got to the quarterfinals of a Champions League since 2010. Being able to almost break that barrier then almost allows you to think, okay, yeah, we can do that again. So I think going forward, it's not really about putting a ceiling on where you think this Arsenal team can go, because in a way that just limits what you can do. So I think it's really about just enjoying the ride in a way and seeing just, yeah, where they can actually go in real time.
Okay, before we wrap this up, quick questions to the both of you. Hypothetical, but likely to happen over the summer. Arsenal need to buy one player to add to this squad. What position? What's the priority for them? Jordan?
I mean, I know I was just going on about how they can't move Kai Havertz, but, you know, but I think when you get to this point of the building process, it's really difficult to look and go, that's a major weakness, you know? I think Timber coming back in, probably maybe he takes over for Zinchenko. So my place to look at would be probably that penalty box striker. I still think Arteta has got that ruthless mentality that even if Havertz is the man that gets them over the line to the end of the season, I still think he'll want an out and out. That's a number nine profile. So it would be a number nine for me, or someone, because I think you also need to really have someone who can cover for Saka and Martinelli, who's at a higher level than, say, Reece Nelson or Nketiah. So maybe if it's not a number nine, then I would love somebody like a Kudus to who can play right. He can play nine, he can play 10, he can play on the left, can play sort of another four. And it really feels like an Arsenal signing who can play across everywhere.
I'd probably agree on the wide areas as what I'd look for, just because, as Jordan said, if you're able to get to this point without that kind of proven nine, I think you're okay. obviously, it would be nice to have that, but just looking at the structure of the team, I think it's all about making sure you're ready for when these players pick up knocks and have someone like Trossard who is able to fit in a couple of positions at a really high level. So I would look to maybe the wide areas to give Martinelli and Saka a bit more, not, I wouldn't say rest, but also to keep them honest in a way.
A competition.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's probably where I'd look, because when you look at how the team's been built, especially by design, most of the defensive areas have been taken care of.
Okay, brilliant.
Oh, actually, another one.
Look at him, look at him.
Also, he's on a spend. No, no,
I said one, man. Yeah, I said one.
But also, this is more like long-term thinking. But what happens in that number six position will really interest me, because of how adaptable Declan Rice has been. Obviously, Jorginho has been playing there a lot more recently, but he can't do that forever. So that may be one for next summer.
We're still building up. Yeah. We're still building. Jens, thanks so much for your time, Jordan. And also, don't forget to rate and review the podcast. Thank you so much for listening. We're back tomorrow.
You've been listening to the Athletic FC podcast. The producers were Guy Clark, Mike Stavrou and Jay Beale. The executive producer was Amy Moorhead. To listen to other great Athletic podcasts for free, search for The Athletic on Apple, Spotify and all the usual places. The Athletic FC podcast is an Athletic Media Company production.
The Athletic.